Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is another episode with me, Lizzie, and this is the lovely Justin. And each week we meet and we spend our lives, Justin, searching for wonderful sources that we feel would be good starting points for these kind of conversations that we have. And we alternate who finds the source. This week it's Justin's source. And Justin, I say this all the time, but I love the range of sources that we have and the ones that you find. I feel like the ones I find, of course, from my world. And yes, there's a range of them. But then when you add yours, I think, my goodness, imagine the source if source the pool of sources, if there was like six of us doing this or something, how many we would be finding. It's extraordinary how big our worlds are and how many different reference points there are. So thank you for finding this. And as usual, we're going to read this together and then see where this conversation takes us. So thank you for being here. And Justin, thank you for being here every week and choosing such brilliant sources.
Thank you, Lizzie. Well, I want to add my thanks to everyone who's with us because this sort of generous arrangement we all have together where we speak and listen, and the feeling of being held in multiple circles, people is so profound for me and joyful. And I wanted this week to make a very special request, which is to any of you who listen on the Apple Podcasts. One of the ways you can really help people find us is just to do a review and tap the number of stars that you think this is worth. It's so sort of like opposite to the way we're thinking about this, but I know that if you do that, and particularly if you write something there, then people find their way to us, which I'm making a big deal of because I know how much these conversations help people. And so one of the ways, if you're listening there, that you can help this conversation find its way into other people's lives is to do that. And here's the source for this week. So I came across David Graeber and his work relatively recently. He died last year, and this is from, I think, his final book. And I want to say thank you to Rebecca Solnit, whose work we featured a few times, who is the person who, in her work, introduced me to him. And it feels really good, Lizzie, to be talking about the ordinary, everyday stuff of life, which David talks about in such a profound and important way. So this is in the middle of a section of his book, The First 5,000 Years. And it begins with a man called Fruichen, who I think is a walrus hunter. Fruichen tells how one day, after coming home hungry from an unsuccessful walrus hunting expedition, he found one of the successful hunters dropping off several hundred pounds of meat. He thanked him profusely, and the man objected indignantly. "Up in our country, we are human," said the hunter, "and since we're human, we help each other. We don't like to hear anyone say thanks for that. What I get today, you may get tomorrow. Up here, we say that by gifts, one makes slaves, and by whips, one makes dogs." The refusal to calculate credits and debits can be found throughout the anthropological literature on egalitarian hunting societies. Rather than seeing himself as human because he could make economic calculations, the hunter insisted that being truly human meant refusing to make such calculations, refusing to measure or remember who had given what to whom, for the precise reason that doing so would inevitably create a world where we began comparing power with power, measuring, calculating, and reducing each other to slaves or dogs through debt. It's not that he, like untold millions of similar egalitarian spirits throughout history, was unaware that humans have a propensity to calculate. If he wasn't aware of it, he could not have said what he did. Of course, we have a propensity to calculate. We have all sorts of propensities. In any real life situation, we have propensities that drive us in several different contradictory directions simultaneously. No one is more real than any other. The real question is, which we take as the foundation of our humanity and therefore make the basis of our civilization.
Thank you, Justin. The refusal to calculate credits and debits can be found throughout the anthropological literature on egalitarian hunting societies. Rather than seeing himself as human because he could make economic calculations, the hunter insisted that being truly human meant refusing to make such calculations, refusing to measure or remember who had given what to whom, for the precise reason that doing so would inevitably create a world where we began comparing power with power, measuring, calculating, and reducing each other to slaves or dogs through debt. It's not that he, like untold millions of similar egalitarian spirits throughout history, was unaware that humans have a propensity to calculate. If he wasn't aware of it, he could not have said what he did. Of course we have a propensity to calculate. We have all sorts of propensities. In any real life situation, we have propensities that drive us in several different contradictory directions simultaneously. No one is more real than any other. The real question is, which we take as the foundation of our humanity and therefore make the basis of our civilization.
Thank you, Lizzie. I'm really enjoying hearing you read David Graeber's words and also just reflecting on the many different ways there are of writing. You know, last week we were reading poetry and now we're reading this, and they're different, but I'm feeling very grateful for David Graeber for telling us this, which is, it seems to me, that the parts that really, when I first found this, grabbed me so strongly. Up here we're human, and since we're human, we help each other. And then, of course, we have a propensity to calculate, but we have all sorts of propensities. And the real question is, which we take as the foundation of our humanity and therefore make the basis of our civilization. And, you know, last time we spoke, you and I, we were talking about fear and love, panic and attention, you know, wonder and frantic hurry and fleeing. And it seems to me that one of the troubles that we get into individually and collectively is when we get into a story that we are this way, you know. So we're human, so of course we're going to treat one another badly. I'm human, so of course I'm going to calculate and try to get the better of you and try to make sure you don't get the better of me, and keep a score of debts and credits. It's not that we can do that, because sometimes all of those things are called for, but it's which ones we make the story of our being human. And it is a choice. I think that's the thing that shines so strongly here to me, is that whatever culture we ended up in, whatever society we ended up in, whatever the big stories of being human we ended up in, those stories were choices that people made, choices about which stories to put in the middle and which stories to put at the edge. And at the moment, for many of us in the world, the story that we ought to be afraid of one another, we ought to try to clamber on top of one another, we ought to be afraid of the world, we ought to be in a hurry, we ought to be calculating and measuring everything, and if it isn't calculatable or measurable, it's not real. We ought to be reducing ourselves and one another to objects or obstacles. It's so hard to see that those are, it's hard to see that they're the center, because we get caught up in all the time, and it's also hard to see that somebody chose that. I mean, many millions of people chose it, and we can choose differently. What would it be like to start to act in such a way where we extend kindness as the first principle to one another? Or when, as we were talking about last time, about what it would be like to put the story that loving the world and paying attention to the world is the central one. Anyway, that's the thing that really, you know, sort of this really throws up, which is we're storytellers. We can tell a different story, and the story that we tell changes us.
Yeah, I'm really appreciating this line of no one propensity is more real than any other. That's quite an undoing sentence for me. Like, oh, so if all of our propensities are equally as real as one another, so my propensity to calculate is as real as my propensity to help. If they're on an even footing, it really genuinely is about, okay, so if they're all the same, which one am I going to choose? They're all as strong, which one am I going to choose? That feels a really big invitation. And of course, you know, we say this so much, Justin, but there's so many things in our worlds that we're dragged towards kind of involuntarily, like calculation and or cynicism or fear. And so to be invited into that, they're all equal, these propensities, is a very different story about propensities than we're normally told. You know, many times kind of inherent in everything is human beings are powerless, human beings are selfish, human beings, there's all kinds of things where we're told what we are and then end up acting that way. And so I'm feeling, I haven't read more than, I think we actually had another David Graeber source at one point that we read together about, I don't know, some kind of economics that wasn't our current economics is what my memory tells me. But really, I don't know that much about David Graeber and his work. But in this minute, I'm receiving the invitation of kind of reeling our power back into ourselves and making choices based on our humanity rather than what we're told we should be doing. And so this example of hunting is such a kind of an evocative one for me as well, because it's not a luxury. I don't think this is how it's written anyway. Like, this is when people were hunting to survive. So this kind of generosity is quite profound, because it could mean that tomorrow I don't have anything because I've given it to you. And yet this generosity existed in that place of hunting for animals so that you could eat them and survive. And so in reference, and to have that as the context, that people in this time were surviving by hunting and eating, and right there was the generosity. It wasn't, oh, I'm going to stock this up so I can eat it and nobody else is going to survive but me, in a kind of survival of the who gets more animals survives narrative. It's different than that. So I'm feeling that there's a big invitation to realize that we do have a choice about how we can be, and that no matter how hypnotized we've been, no matter how many times we've been told that we have to, that we bought into the story of lack, that we've been told we have to hoard, that we have to get as much of stuff as we possibly can, because who knows what's going to happen one day. In spite of that, we could just put all these propensities as equal and make choices. That is possible. I think that's what I'm feeling in the reading of it, this big, profound invitation to, oh, they're equal to one another, therefore I can choose. Because anything is only the story we tell about it. I could tell the story that my calculation propensity is much stronger than my helping capacity, but I'd also be telling a story. So therefore I could also just choose to take up David Graeber's invitation that no one propensity is more real than any other. And he uses the word real as well, not even more strong or more dominant. He's saying more real, that all of our human attributes are equally as real as one another, and we can be conscious about that and decide, what do we want our world to be? What do we want? What feels most sustainable? What feels most life-giving? What feels most fair? We could say that too.
Right. I'm really, really touched by that attention you're putting on choosing. And what you just said about the distinction you made between real and strong. Like, it's true that for any of us at any one time, certain propensities might be stronger than others. because we've practiced them more, or to link back to a kind of conversation we've been in many times in this long conversation, because certain propensities or qualities, see, if we turn the word propensity into qualities, into human qualities, certain qualities of ours have been exiled. We've not been in contact with them because they haven't been welcomed where we are, because of what we grew up in the midst of, because of our what we've been afraid of, because of our shame. We've exiled propensities and qualities of ours so that they've been neglected or not had a look in. And I think one of the real difficulties that many of us face is that the overarching stories of our culture are the ones of calculation themselves. So when you're trying to figure out, I could hear it, I could feel it in myself as you were talking about calculation. If I try to hold the capacity to calculate and the capacity to love, the capacity to calculate is quite likely to say that love stuff doesn't add up to much that's measuring. And if we're prioritizing the realness of the propensity to calculate, it will exile many, many, many other qualities that make us human, like our capacity to take care of one another, or our capacity to marvel, or our capacity to make art, or our capacity for touch, or our capacity to hold one another, or our capacity simply to be straightforwardly generous because we can, or our capacity to be reverent or present. So so then to see that really what we are the ones who can choose. We can choose together what we attend to. We can choose together what we welcome. We can choose together what we nurture in ourselves and in one another. We can choose what we practice and what we don't practice. We can choose the stories we tell about all of that, and we can also choose the ordering of values that we have about what's important at any one moment and what's not. And that I could hear from what you were saying also that we can choose not to be dogmatic about any of it. So we could choose to sort of get into sort of dogmatism and go, well, love is always more important than calculation. But that would be as much of a mistake as going calculation is always more important than love. Like sometimes what we have to do is bring all of our human set, our human qualities out alongside one another. And instead of being thrown to one end or another where they seem to be in opposition, to be the ones who hold them all out in front of ourselves and in front of one another and choose together what's called for now. And I was thinking about when you were talking about, for some reason, I was thinking about the stories we get, the stories we get told about what it is to be a human. I think that very often the sort of public story is we're selfish, self-centered, irrational, instead of we're beings that can cultivate wisdom and deep care, kindness, presence, openness, courage. Like how, and there are so many ways in which our agency and our capacity and the beauty of being a human who can choose in the way that you're talking about gets marginalized or reduced, like thrown out. I kind of feel like this conversation and David Graeber's work is reminding us of the sheer marvelousness and variety and I don't know what the word is, like the giftedness, the being in receipt of gifts, but also being able the ones who can give gifts to one another of all sorts, is it is to be a human that, gosh, it's so easy to forget.
Yeah. I'm receiving as well, Justin, from you this wondering about the different propensities coming from different places. So I know my propensity to calculate comes from often a fearful place. How much do I have? How much do you have? How much do we have? Are we going to be all right? Are you going to be all right? Am I going to be all right? That's the realm of lack. And many times it's realistic, like, yes, there's a lack here. But many more times than that is a kind of underlying story that isn't objectively true. Like, I definitely have enough food to also give you some food. That's mostly true. And yet, that has to be a choice for me. Like, I know in my ancestry, in my background, there's a lot of lack. And I think it's probably true for most people because the world has not always been a materially abundant experience for people because of all of the things that have happened in history. We all have lack kind of imbued in us from wars and people not being able to eat. And of course, that exists all the way around the world now. But you and I generally have food to eat every day. And yet, in our lineage, there's a hell of a lot. My lineage is definitely a lot of lack, and I think it's probably true for you too. And so I'm receiving today a kind of invitation into, there are some times when my lack has validity to it, and there are some times when it doesn't. And in those moments where it's not objectively true, that I can choose to be generous and it doesn't take anything away from me. But it feels like there is, I know this was last week's conversation in a way, that the difference between love and fear, but I think there are propensities that feel born of love and other ones that feel born of fear. And for me, it's becoming really clear that I need to be clear on the distinction between the underneathness of each of my propensities so that I can also find language to become conscious of which behaviors and which actions I take coming from a place of scarcity and clenchedness and worry versus which ones are coming from a place of faith and trust and a narrative of underlying abundance that we'll find a way, that this world is abundant and beautiful and we can rely on each other. And the world that's born of that is a really different world that's born of me being frightened and small and scarce and worried and like a little kind of popcorn kernel of a person who just wants to retreat and be tiny. And so I feel like I'm learning this distinction between who we were talking about. There's a choice here. I feel like for me anyway, it's not a simple choice. It's like it's a choice born of some deeper awareness of where my responses are coming from, really. And somehow, when I know that and I can make the distinction of what they're born of, I can make clearer choices about what I do on a kind of with the actions that I take.
I'm really struck by something you said, that certain propensities come from fear and some of them come from love. I wonder if the way that it's occurring to me to say it is, any of our propensities could come from love. And often we make poor choices about which to bring when the place that it's coming from is fear. So I was thinking about calculation. So there are places it's possible to calculate with love. Let's sit together and look at what resources this household, this country has, and make really good decisions about how to use them. We could do that. So that's one thing I thought about. The other thing I thought about was that sort of fear, lack, calculation, love distinction gets pulled into play for many of us, even when there's not a lack at all. So the example I was thinking of was, can I let myself love you and take care of you and be present to you and listen to you? Or do I have to be afraid and go and get busy doing other things? It's not like, how much food do I have on my table, which is one kind of, quantity to take care of. It's more like, what of myself am I prepared to bring? So I notice in myself that when I'm afraid, I bring a very, very small subset of the qualities that I have in a fearful, clenched way. And when I can find that in me which is faithful, you said something so beautiful, because you said we can rely on one another. And that when we come from the fearful, calculating place, what we go is, we can't rely on one another, so I have to scrutinize you and be wary of you all the time. And we very quickly create whole societies that are like that, where we're all keeping that going. So I was feeling really sort of reminded of what it is to find the way to that in ourselves, which is essentially loving and makes wise, loving choices about whether now is the moment to count things, or whether now is the moment to appreciate things, or whether it's both at the same time. That sort of essentialness of us that is wide open and choiceful rather than constricted and clenching. And the thing that David Graeber shows us is that we don't have to make our whole civilization fearful and clenching. I mean, in a way, that's the biggest distinction. On which are we going to base the way that we build our societies and our communities and our schools and our politics and our neighborhoods? Which one's it going to be? It makes a huge difference. It makes the difference to everything, actually.
You know, Justin, it's reminding me of this story. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to tell it coherently, but I was at a wedding at the weekend and I sat next to this lovely man who's been a black cab driver in London for 60 years or something. And he said that in the beginning, there was no way that black cab drivers could ever own their cabs. They always had to rent them. And apparently, the narrative was that because black cab drivers were unreliable, they didn't pay their bills. Their income was unpredictable. They weren't really a great bunch of people. And then a guy came along, and he knows this because this guy got in his cab and told him this story. A guy came along, and apparently he was going to a gym or some community space anyway, where there were loads of black cab drivers. And he really liked them all and got in really good relationship with them all. And they just had a really nice time. And he's learned more about them and learned that they could never own their own cabs and everything. And he thought, hold on a second, these are all really good people. Why won't people give them finance to be able to own their own cabs? Like, what's going on? So he started a company that was essentially loaning people, cab drivers, money to be able to own their own cabs over a, 25-year loan or something, so they could pay them back. And everybody apparently said, oh, no, I wouldn't do that. And he took this risk to allow this to happen. And it ended up that that's now how it works, that there's a way that you can own your own cab and that can be your lifetime kind of investment that you're making as you go along making a living or whatever. And it strikes me that that man made a decision that was different in the civilization that's that small piece of the world, which was to feel into the relationships he had with the people that were apparently unreliable and apparently that, the story that had been made about them was that they weren't people to lend money to because they were untrustworthy in some way. And he just thought, well, my experience is that we get on with one another. And he had, I think he sold that business in the end. And he said to this cab driver who I was sitting next to at the wedding, he said, I only had one guy in 20 years of business that didn't pay his, that was like bad debt out of everyone. He said it was the cleanest, most honest, straightforward business that you could imagine. No, nobody didn't want to pay. They were all really faithful to the deals that they'd made and were really, really good people. And it just strikes me that that man chose to make something, to create something out of a trusting place, out of a loving place, rather than a believe the story that he'd been told about this group of people in the world. And it was really sweet because I got to tell this person how over the years as a woman in London, I've really relied on the feeling of a black cab driver of I wouldn't get in any other car in London other than a black cab if it wasn't something that had been arranged. And I feel that that community is also a really, really good space. And so it felt really, really lovely that someone had taken a punt on them and said, okay, I'm going to risk it because I like you and because we get on with one another and I trust you. And that's just a different premise to do business on, even in the world of people trying to make money and making businesses, putting something out there that's based on trust and goodness and faith feels really gladdening to me that that happens in the world.
What a conversation. I feel like there's a whole conversation I want to have with you about business. And I want to tell you about this and also tell everybody who's listening. It's beyond, we're going to end. But this week I came across a wonderful post. I subscribed to the newsletter of an organization called the Center for Humane Technology. And there was a wonderful post they were doing about business models in technology. And they were talking about tech unicorns, which are these companies that get investment and very quickly become worth $1 billion. And everyone goes, tech unicorns, everyone should have. And it's basically a way of making lots of money. And the premise of all tech unicorns is you have to give lots of money back to the shareholders. And that creates business practices that are not in service of the people who use the technology, but in the service of making lots of money. And then they were talking about other kinds of businesses, which they called tech zebras, which were businesses which were based upon the principle that technology can be, can build a kind of civilization like the one that David Graeber is talking about, where we get connected with one another and take care of one another, and where we flourish in one another's presence. And I'll tell you about it another time, because I came across a tech zebra that got me so excited. A business that was based upon all of the principles that we're talking about, which is that you can choose which human qualities you bring into the world. And then what you choose, that's a choice, that you don't have to go with the narrative that everybody says, well, business is like this, therefore you must do it this way. There are lots of people who are saying there are other qualities, other propensities that we could be bringing out in one another through the way that we organize ourselves in business as much as anything else. And that gives me enormous hope. So we have to end. We've come to the end of our time. So Lizzie, thank you. My goodness, what a joy it is to keep on getting reminded of how much of life there is to talk about that can get included in this conversation, and to find ourselves who knows where based upon this excellent source from David Graeber, and then being willing to speak and listen to one another. So thank you so much to you for being one who does that again and again and again, and with me. And thank you to everyone who's with us. And we're going to end here, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.